Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Jhené Egbuamike is not built for the trivial BS that the rest of us mortals concern ourselves with. She's built for buckets and takes. Did I get that right? Did I do that all right?
No, I'm built for air pressure. I'm built for succeeding under pressure.
Now we're talking. Jhené Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. alongside with pressure. You know, pressure breaks pipes or pressure makes diamonds.
Diamonds. Give me a diamond.
In this case, she just needs pressure inside her tires. That's not... Oh.
I need a diamond. For those who can't see, I'm showing my bare hand.
For everyone listening in their car right now, Jhené is flashing her ring finger. So, fellas.
Stop. I was a little concerned for a moment because I was like, did I just show them that I hopped out of the shower and I didn't put enough lotion on? So.
Oh, no.
So, I need air in my tires and lotion in my hands.
We don't want to start off our Friday ashy. That's not what we're looking for around here. Jhené Golic Jr. Here, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the show. Penn's Oil Performance Line. And we are trying to get ourselves right and prepared, Jhené, because we got a chance to maybe send somebody to the NBA Finals tonight or stave off elimination. It's a big day around here today as Heat and Celtics head to Game 5 of that series tonight. And I truly don't know what to make of that one, but we'll get to that in a little bit. We got to address what happened with the Lakers last night. They got back on track, and now everyone's going to make the joke, Jhené. Denver's got them right where they want them.
Exactly. I saw that happen like immediately when the final score rang. But I see this as a big bounce back game, and I'm saying big for a reason because they started their big lineup. A lot of the criticism the game before was, hey, these big guys, Anthony Davis, JaVale McGee, and Dwight Howard all amounted an unlimited amount of rebounds, like four total. How does that happen? All right, they said, all right, we're going to right our wrongs, and they start Dwight Howard, who amounts in a double-double. Anthony Davis put up 30-plus. LeBron James was aggressive, taking on the matchup of Murray late. So, yeah, they stepped up, and when you see the top team do that, they look like a force to be reckoned with.
They did look like a force to be reckoned with, and a lot of that down the stretch was also due to the play certainly of the big stepping up. They cleaned up on the offensive glass, but then late in the game when things got tight, LeBron James endeared himself to every old head watching all of this, Jhené, and I'm so glad in the battle for the hearts and minds of the people that are traditionally Jordan supporters, LeBron James adds fuel to the fire that got started a little bit earlier this playoff run when we remember Giannis Antetokounmpo late in the game drawing some flack for not D-ing up the other team's best player, and now everybody can look and say, see, this is how a superstar is supposed to act.
Exactly, but I think it's contagious, right? Like, first of all, he knows that is sending the right signal for his team, and this is a commitment that LeBron James has made this season. I think, you know, the years past, they're like, oh, I have to carry so much of the offensive load. I'm going to take a playoff here or there. In this setting, he has to set the standard because, you know, we talked about it earlier. How can Anthony Davis start slow? Well, it starts by motivation by your leader. Like, if LeBron is taking the defensive matchup against Jamal Murray, who had a mean, and I saw on your broadcast, I supported like a very supportive spouse, you know, a mean yeet kind of moment, right? With the layup that went up and under.
Oh, yeah.
It was beautiful. I think after those types of plays, you're like, oh, snap, this guy is feeling himself. And so you saw them sort of ratchet up their defense, especially when it came to being vertical defensively late. So, you know, LeBron James, yes, everyone, shout out to Tony Allen, who we had earlier on this week. Defense really, you know, they always say offense sells tickets, defense will win you games, and that's exactly what it did for the Lakers, but rebounding wins you championships, and that's why we circled it, because that is something that the Lakers cannot lose. That is their biggest advantage over the course of all teams left in the bubble.
Jhené Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and we did talk a lot about that, that it seemed far more likely than not that the Lakers' bigs would not go out like that yet again. I want to get into the impact of one player in particular after we hear from LeBron James, who talked about that decision down the stretch to energize his team in the way you just mentioned.
You just see how low his brow is. If his brow is really low, then you know not to talk.
JK, wrong one.
I know it was winning time, and Jamal had it going. Kid is special, so you know, I tell my teammates that I had him, and everyone else can kind of stay at bay and stay home, and I was able to get a couple stops, and we was able to rebound the basketball, which is the most important thing.
Chinay, be honest, at this point in his career, LeBron James probably a little more worried about that matchup than he lets on right there. Maybe just a little.
No, I see this just as what you outlined. This is the old man, I called him Old Faithful on SportsCenter. Like the old man flex. Again, 35 years old. He's not old, but relatively to his competition, I think Jamal Murray's 23 years old. He's flexing. Like early in your career, you can't go out there and say, like, look, I'm a part of the team. Like you can't go, well, I wasn't going to call out a player who does this in press conferences quite often, but you can't go out there and just say, hey, guys, like, this is all me. You learn to earn that credibility. And LeBron James, like, he's speaking on it. He's allowing himself to say, hey, for those who didn't vote for me for MVP, look what I'm doing here. And I saw that as one of those moments.
Yeah, he's a highly motivated player right now. He made no ifs, ands, or buts about that when he spoke after the MVP got taken out. But we mentioned LeBron James is one of the constants. He's one we expect to go out and perform, especially this late in the playoffs. There's no more feel outs. There's no more of what we see in the early rounds where he expects to win and win overwhelmingly. Now he understands the competition gets ratcheted up, so consistent performances like this. But for Anthony Davis, and really Anthony Davis as the leader of the bigs on that team with JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard last night, Chinay, they chose to start Dwight Howard at the five there. How big is the ripple effect from some move like that go as the Lakers shuffle the chess pieces around a bit?
Well, you made a really good point about this in the pre-show meeting. It's not just Dwight Howard that's going out there and he's giving you a couple extra fouls. He's trying to slow down Nikola Jokic, which he did a pretty good job of, which is different. You know, Jokic is a different big. It's what he does also offensively, right? Like what you considered to break them in the first half, and I'm speaking of the Nuggets, was the offensive boards. Dwight Howard had 6-0 boards, had a double-double. So when you're getting not only, you know, aggressive nature from the supporting parts, including Dwight, and on top of that, getting extra possessions and easy looks at the basket, a lot of people know once you get the offensive rebound, the offense gets so much easier. People are, you know, sort of transitioning to the other side of the court. You can kick it out to a three-point shooter, or you can get the easy lay-in. So for Dwight to really come in and be intentional, and it's not just Dwight. AD, I think he was started 7-for-7 for the game from the field. He had 12 points in like the first 5 minutes. They were on one from the jump, and I think it all stemmed from their lack of production the game before.
It was incredible to watch. You mentioned offensive reboundings. The Lakers outdid Denver on the offensive board by a mark of 12-6, and the points coming off that were huge throughout the portion of this, as was LeBron James getting back to the free throw line. We know that this was kind of part of the conversation going into this game, and it had Mike Malone very, very salty, the Denver Nuggets head coach, after the game. Chinay, you see this, we see this all the time, the politicking for calls that go on, especially when it pertains to star players in big time moments like this. Was this something that you think swung back in LeBron's favor in a way that seems suspicious, or is this just how the game goes when you're talking about one of the best we've ever seen?
Look, they're down in the series, and if I'm a coach, I'm gonna be shooting my shot, even at the expense of potentially getting fined. Like, if you see a discrepancy when it comes to free throws shooting, first of all, you have to know what's real. The real factor here is that the Lakers were the aggressors from the jump. And when you are the aggressor, you get the perks, meaning they sort of start deferring to this is the state and the state of the game for this night. Like, you sort of play from the flow from the jump. And so that worked to the Lakers' advantage by attacking the rim relentlessly. Now you're going to get the foul calls. But it was not out of bounds for him to say that, because his team is facing a huge deficit. And if this public perception helps the refs sort of maybe start looking out for the Nuggets, why not?
You know what? It is an interesting move, because they saw they were dealing with it. I mean, having to sub out Nikola Jokic the way they did at the end of that game, because he's sitting there with five fouls trying to preserve him, changes the dynamic completely down the stretch of a game that becomes very, very close in a lot of ways. And so with this one today, it is all lining up. I'm feeling very, very good right now about the Lakers in five prediction. Our show going to get a real dub on this one early on.
I mean, we can't be premature, but I do agree. Lakers in five.
Lakers in five. You heard it here. Stick with it. Chinay and Golic Jr. reminding you to tune into the NBA playoffs because they're on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight as Kemba and the Celtics battle Tyler Hero. Yeah, Tyler Hero in the Heat. That's how much respect this man is getting. Presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up last night, proud to say, Beards won the facial hair battle. We will check in with the NFL's old man hero next. It's Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.
Chinay and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Oh, I feel like not enough people are talking about this today. And no, I'm not referencing what's going on in the Power Five. We'll be joined in about 10 minutes by Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott to discuss the Pac-12 voting to return to play later this fall. Obviously, we've seen this has kind of been the domino effects falling all season long. The Big Ten, we know, is going to start to play, but the Mountain West getting in on that. I believe the MAC votes today, so a lot happening. Chet Angle Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And
I'm so excited.
News. I am.
I'm so excited. This is a guy that I've known for a while. He's been so supportive of our Stanford women's basketball runs and has had an open door for athletes to come in and communicate. And so I'm really excited to chat with Larry Scott.
Yeah, I'm very curious. Obviously, his Big Ten counterpart and Kevin Warren had a lot more on his plate to deal with during the time where both conferences had announced they weren't playing. And so how he dealt with that time period, how he communicated with everybody involved, and what drove them to this return to play, all coming up in about 10 minutes here on Chinay and Golic Jr. But we got to get to what happened last night. Thursday night football, again, back-to-back weeks we've talked about, Chinay, going into these matchups and not being sure. Well, on paper, it's the Dolphins and the Jaguars. And then all of a sudden, Ryan Fitzpatrick, the bearded maniac, goes out onto the field and is launching his body left and right, throwing tight window passes, and ultimately leading the Dolphins to a 31-13 win against the Jags. And Chinay, I look at this and I'm amazed. We've talked so much, so glowingly about older players like LeBron James. Like, Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't in any of those conversations. He's not the same caliber of player. But to do what he has done in his entire career, it's just a testament to how fun sports can be.
So fun. I mean, I was watching the game, and I don't know if I'm a weirdo for this, but like, I fell in love because you see the beard coming out of the helmet. And then after a huge play, where was it? Was it 19 straight passes, right? Or so, somewhere in that echelon, you just see him screaming out of excitement. He genuinely loves the game. He talked about it in the post-game presser. But what I also love is that, you know, he became the first player, the first NFL player since 1950 to record at least one victory for six different teams against a single opponent. And when you rattle off as a member of, you know, the Dolphins, he's now defeated, you know, the Jaguars as a member of the Dolphins, Bengals, Bills, Titans, Houston Texans, and New York Jets. Those fun stats that pepper in, you know, something that is a career that I guess you can say maybe people have looked past. I'm glad it was on, you know, feature and showcase Thursday.
Ryan Fitzpatrick is he operates such an interesting space in NFL folklore around that area. Like, I feel like him and Josh McCown, man, to get those guys in a room and hear the stories of two journeyman QBs who have still played a lot of football, helped mentor a lot of quarterbacks here. Ryan Fitzpatrick knows that in the long run, Tua Tagovailoa, the Dolphins quarterback, is going to be the guy. But Chinay, I look at this situation with Tua. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, and think this. Especially because of the way this offseason went down, it being pandemic shortened, all these different variables, and because of how young the rest of this Dolphins roster is, Ryan Fitzpatrick is the only player over 30 on that team. I look and say, if you can get this from Ryan Fitzpatrick for the remainder of the year, get some job on the job learning for the younger players on that team, non-Tua version, him not seeing the field is the best version of this season for them.
Yeah, this is a win-win scenario because essentially we always joke this show is known for win never for Trevor. And then, you know, last year the iteration was, you know, tank for Tua. You now have your quarterback that you really are excited about, but also it's mired in the health concerns. And, you know, I don't know what the latest is per se, but I just remember towards the end of training camp, there were reports out saying that he had not yet been tackled, right? And so in this limited season where you have low preparation and then you're making that next professional jump, I will never forget, and you know this, that first game you play, you are welcomed to knowing that the professional level, it's like, oh, it's faster, all that stuff. The thing that hits you the most is literally the physicality. So if you haven't had a whole built-in, you know, year or so to prepare for that moment, which typically, you know, NFL quarterbacks, it's nice to get your rookies a year under their belt before they hit the field, I'd be concerned. And you are in a win-win situation now with a quarterback that's producing and then also a quarterback, you know, that's getting their reps in, but in a very safe way after his injury.
Yeah, and you have different schools of thought on this, Chinay, which I understand. Like, some people would say, well, the only way you're really going to learn is by going out there and doing, and there's certainly some merit to that, but we look even in the case of someone with comparatively a more stable team, better overall roster around him, like Justin Herbert with the Los Angeles Chargers. He only ended up on the field because Tyrod Taylor got his lung punctured. And while he got out there and showed well for himself in that situation and probably should be on the field going forward, it doesn't change the fact that those two teams are in such largely different places.
Yeah, agreed. But now looking at the outlook here, how do you see this team positioning itself? Clearly winning matters, but do you think that this is a good scenario for them moving forward? Obviously, there's a lot of youth, but where do you see the Dolphins going?
I think in a positive direction. Like they've again given themselves the wiggle room. You added an extra year to Brian Flores' contract when you signed him to kind of account for this growth phase here, because you knew while it didn't go exactly as planned, the tank for Tua model was still the model in there. And so now you've got this young team full of draft picks. You got two rookies starting on your offensive line. You've got Eric Flowers on starting on your offensive line, which I know he's gone through a career renaissance, but that's still something you've got to work on and work with as you're going forward. And you've got a bunch of young, talented players. You brought in some vets this offseason. Like, it's all starting to move in a really good direction. And so if you can get through this season, because we know it's such a hodgepodge, no one expects the Dolphins to win that division this year. No one expects the Dolphins to be a playoff team. So if they can get meaningful reps for all those guys in some key spots, add another year of draft picks, I think this is a team that, as we see in the AFC East now without Tom Brady, I understand the Bills, great roster. The Patriots have Cam Newton, but it's certainly a different feel when it's not Tom Brady and Bill Belichick sitting at the top of the mountain.
And you know, I'm just thinking about this, like, personally, if I'm Tua, because I've been someone that has come back from an injury, a debilitating injury, and I think this is the year. Like, I opted out of playing, right? And so that was a tough decision, and it was largely predicated on my injury history. While it would be great to see him, you know, this year, I think this is the year where if I'm making that personal decision, I'm in no rush.
No, and that's, you know what, you would like everyone to have the ability to make that choice for themselves. We understand that's not the case for everyone across the board in a lot of situations, but for the Dolphins here, because they've got such a unique situation, like Gardner Minshew staring across the field at his future self in Ryan Fitzpatrick last night, seeing the perfect quarterback for this situation, and a guy who's having a blast doing it as well. Here was Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Dolphins quarterback, after their game, talking about just having a blast doing all of this, and you couldn't tell by his post-game outfit.
You know, I feel like the luckiest guy in the world sometimes, getting to go outside and play football with my friends. And, you know, I think you could see it. Mike's in the room right now, but every time Mike scores a touchdown or makes a catch, the look on his face is like he's never caught a ball before. And it just, it's fun for us to go out there and run around a little bit.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Chest hair fully out, Ryan Fitzpatrick in all his glory. And all seemed right with the world if only for
a night.
Did you
see something on social media after that? You said there was some kind of fun happening with the facial hair on social media after this.
We will have to find that out during the break because I'm not 100% sure. And we will also get to the break and find out how everything went down with the return to play for the Pac-12. Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott joins us next. That's coming up on Shanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Shanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And we have seen a mass return to the world of college football from a number of conferences that have been more driven to get back on the field. More Driven is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, More Driven. And one of those conferences, as announced yesterday, was the Pac-12. And with that news in mind, we are delighted to be joined now by Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott. Commissioner, we appreciate the time today, and we're excited about the news for you and the Pac-12. We heard the announcement a while back about the partnership and the acquisition of Rapid Daily Testing, but I'm curious, what was the final hurdle that you guys got over that allowed you to feel comfortable voting to return to play?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. This has felt like a race with multiple hurdles along the way. But we've been guided by the health and safety of student-athletes first and foremost. And given the spread of the virus in our markets, until we could get to daily testing of student-athletes, our medical advisors were not comfortable with us playing. So a couple of weeks ago, we announced a deal with San Diego-based company, Quidel, the first FDA-approved rapid point-of-care test that allowed us to get there. But we've also had significant obstacles and concerns from public health officials in California, Oregon, that would not allow practice, not allow teams indoors. And that only came literally before our board meeting yesterday. In addition to the forest fires that we've had out here, that's made the air pretty tough. We would have had to cancel practice and games anyway. So, you know, we've taken a very measured, cautious approach. We weren't going to start playing until we could meet the conditions set by our medical advisors and get local approvals.
So great to have you here, Larry Scott, Pac-12 Commissioner on Chiney and Golic Jr. Great to see you again virtually, Commissioner Scott. You have both talked the talk, but also walked the walk when we talk about communication for both athletes and also on the side of experts and leaders. And when I was at Stanford, my athletic director for some time was Bob Bowlesby, the now commissioner of the Big 12. Communication, as I said, has been so key. I've seen you do it. I've been on Zooms with you. But what have you learned from other conferences that have already started playing that helped inform your decision?
Sorry about that. We've had the benefit of seeing our colleagues start in other conferences and learn from them. I'm on calls with Bob and my fellow commissioners from the other Power Five conferences several times a week. And we compare notes on testing. We've seen teams have to postpone. So on a variety of issues. But, you know, the only way we were going to get the result we got is if we were communicating a lot in our line. In fact, this week, Chiney, I know you've been on calls. We did a call with any student athlete that wanted to talk to our medical advisors directly. We had a panel discussion on medical advisors, student athletes. Next day, we did it with parents of our student athletes. We know people have concerns, and it was important to us that they felt they could get the answers directly. They knew we were being transparent, communicative, and that everyone's comfortable moving forward. So, yeah, we're slower to start than others. We're starting later than others. But as a result of taking the steps we've taken, the communication, I think we've got a very solid plan. People are on board, aligned, feel comfortable with it. And hopefully once we start, we've got less interruptions as a result of daily testing and the careful protocols that we have in place.
Talking to Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott here on Chiney and Golic Jr. And Commissioner, I'm curious, when you went through those Zooms with parents and players, because Lord knows the world of college football, we've seen large-scale reaction from players and parents inside the Big Ten, coaches there. What were the concerns or questions that were most voiced by the players and parents as you listened and turned that ear to them?
So on Wednesday's Zoom call with parents, we had 150 different questions that came through the chat function and the Q&A function. Everything from the testing protocols to what measures are going to be taken to protect the student athletes when they're away from the facilities, to quarantine procedures, other things. Normal questions a parent would have. I'm a parent of two college-age kids, and you know, you're nervous, and you want to know that the folks that are in charge of your child's health and well-being are guided by science and are, you know, taking all appropriate precautions. So it ran the gamut, but people are getting information from a lot of different places, and you know, it was a chance for them to hear directly from doctors, not filtered through coaches, not filtered through athletics departments, hear directly from medical professionals, including infectious disease experts, what's happening with this virus and how can we best protect student athletes.
That is so important. Here with Larry Scott, Pac-12 Commissioner on Chiney and Golic Jr. And I just want to say congrats, because getting here to today where football will be played in our conference is truly an accomplishment, because our conference, the Pac-12, has, as you mentioned earlier, had its own fair share of challenges. You know, the health situation surrounding the virus and the state, you know, rules, and then also the environmental concerns now. And through your leadership, you found a way to push through. But we all know football really matters. And, you know, as an athlete that's worked so hard to have this opportunity, it's important. But overall, for the conference, the landscape, it's so important to get them on the field as well. What was at stake for bringing football back when it's regard to, you know, our conference?
Well, you know, first and foremost, as you know better than anyone, student athletes want to play. I mean, this is an important part of their identity. Their, you know, sport is part of, you know, their academic goals. And, you know, from a mental health perspective, the connectivity of being on a team, support from their team, you know, was critical. And Pac-12 student athletes, you know, are the best at what they do across the board. Our conference wins more NCAA championships than any other. People go to Pac-12 schools because they want to be the best and compete against the best. So I think the idea that other conferences are competing, football, men's and women's basketball, other Olympic sports, and we're not, I think was tearing at some student athletes. So we felt the weight of the pressure to do everything we could to give student athletes this opportunity to play, but we were only going to do it if we could do it safely and not, shortchange any of the steps. And that's the reason we're not starting football until November 7th. We want to make sure everyone of our programs is a full 6 weeks ramp up. We watch what happens in the NFL. We've seen the number of injuries over the weekend. We see corners being cut in other places, and we weren't going to do it. So we're starting a little later than others, but we could do it with more confidence.
Commissioner Scott, I'm curious, and you know we've talked about this a lot on the show with Chiney, with her Stanford background. That was one of the programs we saw have to make some unfortunate decisions in regards to other programs on campus because of the financial realities. How stark were some of the financial realities that the conference was facing, and how much did that factor into the decision?
Yeah, I mean, this year, I mean, this health crisis has led to an absolute financial calamity for our universities more broadly, and athletics as well. I mean, even with ramping up to play, we're going to play a little bit more in half the games that normally we play and would be on television that our schools would be compensated for. We're going forward with no fans, at least until January 1st. And for many of our schools, that's an economic engine, not just supporting their football programs and their basketball programs, but, you know, aside from a few examples like Stanford women's basketball, most other sports are cost centers. They don't generate revenue. Unfortunately, you know, the impact on football and men's and women's basketball is going to, you know, lead to some tough decisions that have to be made about supporting all these other sports and these opportunities for student athletes that don't bring in the revenue but are critically important to our conference.
And Commissioner Scott, with the conference starting as late as you are, we know one of the big things on everybody's mind is what happens with the college football playoff and that viability as an option for the Pac-12. Do you believe starting as late as you guys are and playing a shorter number of games that you guys will have the opportunity to participate in the college football playoff? And is expansion something you guys have talked about or pushing for given the recent history with the college football playoff and the conference?
Yeah, so on the first one, absolutely have a chance to qualify for the playoff. You know, this is going to be a year where all schools are playing different numbers of games. No one knows how many games they're going to get in. We see Notre Dame's been postponed this weekend. Every week of the college football season so far, there's a number of games that haven't been able to be played. So unlike most seasons where everyone's played the same number of games, this year won't be that. There'll be player availability differences, so the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is going to have a tougher job than normal and have to weigh up these differences, but there's no minimum number of games required. I mean, if we get an undefeated, impressive Pac-12 champion, they're going to be in the discussion, in the mix. What's hard to anticipate is how many games, you know, other teams may have played and did they go undefeated or have risks. You know, we've got less margin for error, that's for sure. But I also think with the protocols we have in place, we're more likely to complete our games without interruption than maybe other conferences are. So we'll see. You know, the expansion discussion is absolutely on the table long term. We're having a lot of robust debate about that internally. Short term, there's so many variables about what's going to happen this season. We've locked into the current 14 model this season. I think everyone's just hopeful to get through as many games as possible. If we can be playing a college football playoff and have bowl games, everyone will feel that that was a great success and our student athletes would have had a terrific experience, and we're not fiddling with the format this year.
Certainly already, as Chiney mentioned, an accomplishment just to get back to this point for the conference and being able to return to play. Commissioner Scott, we appreciate the time and the insight. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time. You always make time for athletes, both current and former.
Great being with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott with us here on Chiney and Golic Jr. A lot of information to break down coming off of that, and let's stick with what he brought up at the end there, the college football playoff and what the requirements should look like for a season unlike any other. We'll tell you what next on Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
I want you all to sit here and bathe in Vin Diesel.
Wait, oh, this is Vin?
This is Vin Diesel.
Oh, it's a vibe. Give it a moment. Let it sit.
Is there a drop? There's got to be a drop coming, right? Oh, here we go.
Wait. Come on, Vin, America.
Triple X doing it to him. Oh, he's going to hurt us, isn't he? Oh, we're still not there yet. We're going to find our way.
everyone deserves this Friday, okay?
Honestly, it's been a long week. I am going to wait for this Vin Diesel drop to hit.
Show me something.
Woo! Did Vin actually kind of do it to him? This is Vin Diesel and Kygo, right? Yeah, no, I think the official ruling is that song kind of goes.
That song is low-key everything I need.
Whoa! All right, hold on. We're going around the room here. It's Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Janae, going to start with you. Hot or not? Simple on this one.
Hottie.
I'm with you. This is a hottie with a body. Devin, hot or not?
Hot.
Cliff, you're the only dissenting voice. What the hell?
Shannon,
total
not.
Top trash, and I'm putting up Shannon right now. Let's see what he says. I think it's trash.
Nah, I'm good. That's a hard
pass
for me.
I don't understand trash, bro. What that song is not giving you.
Shout out to Kygo, though, for that fire beat, but the Vin Diesel vocals, he can keep those. Those are trash.
All right, listen, when we're talking about, like, EDM songs, how important are the vocals really? Like, how big? How many wins above replacement is the other vocalist
you
giving
kidding
you
me?
Over?
Wait, hold
when
on,
Avicii was having those vocals with Aloe Black, you don't tell me that didn't make the songs.
I mean, I'm saying it helped, but I'm saying did it help that much more than Vin Diesel?
Yes, absolutely.
But when the beat makes a song, it doesn't shame the singer. The song is still made, but I didn't know we had the same hairstyle, Cliff. I was looking. I hadn't seen you in a minute, and I was so excited to see that we have the same hairstyle.
I had to get it braided real quick, you know.
Okay.
Shout out to the podcast audience.
Yep, shout out to the podcast audience, the radio audience. We appreciate you all sticking with us as we sit around here on a Friday when we need something to make us feel good. And I had no idea. I don't know why the internet wasn't making a bigger deal out of this. Maybe because we were busy with sports and life and other things. But shout out to Vin Diesel.
I mean, there was a whole, I think, Kelly Clarkson show. Like, they played the song and they had all the virtual crowd dancing to it.
We gotta get those people some help, man. Those are people with also, I'd imagine, empty spice racks at home. But that's neither here nor there. Oh. It's Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And Janae, we just finished up with Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott. And the one thing we touched on with him at the end was the idea of what happens with the playoff this year. He said that he believes that even with 7 games on their schedule, playing fewer, starting later, they should still be eligible. When you look at the college football playoff this year, do you think he's right? Should the Pac-12 and should everybody be eligible despite however many games you play?
Absolutely. I think everybody has a chance. There's going to be a lot of unforeseen things. So if a conference or a team misses out on a couple games and the Pac-12 does not because they waited later with their start date, they should be eligible. I think the thing that comes to my mind with the questions is based on the number of games, which is 7, correct? And you're playing your division. You might have someone like an Oregon who came in at the preseason ranked number 9, maybe not playing USC or Utah because they're not in their division, right? North versus South. And so that strength of schedule could really hurt you when it comes to the qualifications. But still, if you have a team that goes out and plays really well, they should have a shot, especially in this small sample size, because guess what? Everyone else is playing with that same small sample size as well.
Yeah, I think that becomes the difficulty of this year, Chiney, is there's none of the cross-conference matchup that we're seeing. There's some out-of-conferences built in, but generally the trend has been not in the Power 5, which is the way we usually kind of judge these conferences year to year.
So what's your take?
Well, I think that everyone should be eligible because I think this year is a vast hellscape, and I think the College Football Playoff Committee's selection process is one that always leaves room for interpretation anyway. Best and most deserving gets globbed together into some weird form. I fear for the Pac-12 because the perception already exists that they're the Power 5 conference on the outside looking in
after
and have
dark.
Been for the last 3 years. Shout out to Pac-12 After Dark, which I love, but the committee hasn't lately, and if they don't have the chance to show their wares against another conference, I just fear that it's really
tough.
Going to take a lot for them to get involved in
it's
this.
It's an uphill battle, but can we give snaps to Commissioner Scott for all the Zooms he's been doing? I was on a couple, especially when it came to social injustice early on, to voice the athletes and sort of give that outside expertise, but he's done it with health, and I thought that was an amazing aspect he told us about as well.
It was, and that's how you avoid situations like we saw in part in the Big Ten. Entanglements is the nicest way that we can put this. All right, coming up next, we're going to run back and see if Vin Diesel has any more tracks to get to and see where Anthony Davis ranks on the list of LeBron James teammates.